Contest Jockey is back this Saturday with a special game, a free contest where you can win a $500 free bet on the Kentucky Derby. Go to contestjockey.com to create an account. Contest will be on the last 8 races at Santa Anita using the Contest Jockey format, which is the same as the World Horse Player Tour format. The details are up on the website, but basically it's horse race betting meets No Limit Hold'em. It's a ton of fun. We'll be doing a live stream for the last 4 races. That'll start about 7. Contest probably starts about 5. We need to get the races drawn to make it all official. But what you need to know is this. Go to contestjockey.com ASAP, set up an account, sign up for this game. It's free. It's fun. Go to contestjockey.com. Welcome to a special edition of the In the Money Players podcast. Bit of a mashup, actually. Could have run this one as a pro player diary in all likelihood, but I didn't have any other plans for the early week show. And I feel like maybe this is the right time to bring back our pro player diary guest to catch up on what he's been up to since the last time we spoke with him. Maybe let him bitch about the tax man some. And of course, look back to some Kentucky Derby prep action. Let's just bring him in right away. He is your Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge champion. He's Sean Barman. Sean, how are things?
Good, Pete. Good. Had a hefty tax bill, but I guess that's not a problem I should bitch about, right?
Good problem.
And also, I want to clear one thing. I prefer record-setting Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge champion.
It's accurate.
If I've got to give half of it to the fucking government, I at least want a good title to go along with it.
Do you have any advice for people? Like, is there anything you could have done differently in advance? Or, I mean, is it just it comes time to pay the piper and that's what it comes down to?
I guess just pay the piper. I mean, I don't know. I guess if you can find some losing tickets along the way, that might help. But no, it's just, we've discussed it before. I was having a pretty good year before that happened and then right. That happened. And it's just, it's time to pay.
There you go. Let's talk. I know you had the last time we did one of these shows, you had a really good subsequent Hong Kong experience. What do you remember of that one? Or is there so much water under the bridge that you barely remember what I'm talking about?
No, I think I do remember. I haven't had too many great experiences since then. So there was a just one of those races in Hong Kong where the figures lined up. They were betting the wrong horse, and I caught an exacta for quite a really big score out of the exacta pool. But just the two fastest horses, they just slept through and let them go off at like 10 and 20 to 1, something like that. And it just came right. So
not a lot to the story, just the numbers stood up and the crowd got it wrong, and you cut a wide swath out of the exacta. That sounds very, very good. What's been going on recently? You mentioned all the success you had back in 23. As we get in now to the middle of April and a significant portion of 24 done, what's the season been like for you? Have you been, no one would blame you as the BCBC record-setting champ, as somebody who had a good year otherwise, to be sitting on your laurels a little bit or thinking about what comes next, or have you just been grinding away? What's been your general attitude towards your work so far in 24?
I'm not super happy with the way I've been working. Got a little lazy and unmotivated for a while. Still, my betting results are fine and much better than they were at this point last year. But I just feel like I got a little lazy and sort of burnt out, honestly. It's just, taking trip notes on 14 horse fields is tough and, that kind of stuff. So I just, I had a little talk with myself last week and tried to sort of rededicate myself to things and, actually started doing figures again to some extent in the U.S. and, picked back up on my Hong Kong stuff and just, looking to gather a little momentum.
So far this year, it's been almost all Hong Kong, very little USA. I'm guessing if you're just starting to do figure stuff again now.
Yeah. I played Pegasus Weekend a little bit, and it played, you know, a little bit of Keeneland since they fired up, and played the contest last weekend. But other than that, it's been mainly Hong Kong.
You mentioned to me off air you weren't fully thrilled with the contest. Thought maybe you forced it a little bit. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, you know, I really wanted to. You know, Jim Goodman's been really good to me since the BCBC. He was a big help in a lot of things, so I wanted to support him. But it you know, in reality, I didn't have good opinions, good enough opinions to really play that contest. I probably had good enough opinions to do exactly what I did, and just, you know, have a very small chance to make a little money but not actually win, and then things broke wrong and I've lost. So, you know, and I'm just gonna have to be a little more careful. I'm not one of these contest players that could just sort of maneuver my way through it with marginal opinions like some of these guys can. I can't win those unless I have good opinions, so I need to keep that in my mind and just, you know, protect the capital a little bit more than I did last weekend. But it's still, you know, I got down to where I had like $1,000 left, and I was torn between playing a straight Gina Romantica into Encino double, or waiting to play Encino into whatever the name of the horse that won the last race, Royal Majesty or whatever the horse's name was. And I decided I couldn't win the contest either way. So I thought I'll play the first one, and then if I hit it, I'll at least have some bullets to fire in the last race, and maybe I could just bet my way into some win, because I did sort of like that horse that won it. So I don't think my decision making was terrible. It just worked out to where, you know, the Gina Romantica ran like shit, and the other two won. But I still wasn't, you know, I would have had a decent day, but I wasn't going to get a BCBC seat, and I wasn't going to win, so it really didn't matter that much.
Gina Romantica was surprisingly bad. I'm curious. There was some real figure discrepancy on her. You know, Bayer had her so fast, and other figures didn't have her nearly as fast. And then she was just bet totally wrong, I thought. I got off her based on that. Not that it did me any good, but it in the end. But I did think that was notable and interesting. Did that? Were you concerned at all by the way she was bet in that situation?
Not really, because they just love to bet Appleby so much that it didn't bother me that much. I mean, I guess she was a little light on the board. And then she's funny because up, you know, for me on her figures, her last two races were really good, but they sort of came out of nowhere too. Like she, you know, was solid, but then all of a sudden she was great. And you just didn't know if that was coming back or not. And I sort of gambled that it would. But yeah, it was just a bad performance overall, I think. It's very flat.
I thought Dettori put on a clinic there, schooling not just Buick, but all the American riders. I mean, I feel like if you reverse the trips of English Rose and Boot Cochet or whatever the name of the winner was, you might have got a different result. Buick to me looked like he took a pull early on English Rose, and that was exactly the thing that gave Dettori the rope that he needed to do what he did to that field. This was a horse that, I'm not saying I came up with her, but Michael Domable on the show we did gave a very good shout to, and I couldn't think of a clever way to use, and I didn't, but and felt very foolish afterwards, because I thought that was a haveable $50 horse, really. But Dettori, really the difference maker. I mean, do you agree that he can make that kind of difference on compared to the rest of the riders we see on a regular basis, even at his advanced, aka my age?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was a great ride, and I had that horse improving. I just thought her figures were a little light, but then given that trip. In the race, I just did that figure this morning. It did end up coming back light. So, it was sort of a good scenario. But, you know, when you're only real, when the pace has to come from a Buick horse, you know, he wants cover so so much. I mean, those European guys really want to have cover and really want to sit that sort of pocket trip if they can. So it makes total sense to me that he didn't send up into her and, yep. And do that. But yeah, it was a good ride. I mean, Dettori's great, man. I mean, he's one of the best jockeys in the world and has been for decades. So he can certainly make a difference.
Glad we have him plying his trade here for, I want to say a little bit longer, but hey, if he keeps riding like this indefinitely, and I thought his little commercial for himself after the race was very entertaining when he basically said, you know, half saddle will travel, put me on something for the Churchill meet. We'll see.
Does he have a Derby mount yet?
He doesn't as of now. I have to look carefully at the list and see if there's anybody double booked, if he has a way of sneaking in there. Hard to imagine anybody getting like jocked off per se for him, but maybe there's that kind of thing where somebody's got two and he can end up sliding in for the other. I mean, it'd be a more fun Derby if he's riding in it. I think that's fair.
Yeah, for sure.
Thoughts on the Lexington, just from a race point of view, since we're talking about it, and Sino, who it sounds like you like, got the job done, was definitely on my short list. I tried to make the liberal arts case. That didn't work out so well. But Encino, very impressive, may end up going in the Derby. He would currently be, I think, in the 20th spot. It's Godolphin. You figure he'll run. I haven't seen any figures yet for the race. Is he more a contender or pretender moving forward for the Triple Crown races for you?
I'm going to pull this figure up right now while I'm talking. You know, I think that race came sort of exactly how I liked it to come. Of course,
Line Stewart ran huge too, yeah, and that's a horse who has to move forward. I wonder if he's. I can't wait to hear what your figure is, but you know, thinking of from a condition point of view, I mean, how does the Line Stewart not move up off that long layoff and sort of some of the fits and starts that he's had? There a couple of very interesting horses for down the line, I think, in this coming out of the Lexington. I just don't know if they're fast enough to have an impact right away, or if it's going to be more of a later in the year kind of a deal.
Yeah, I think they're probably more later in the year horses, but I agree about the Line Stewart. That was a pretty good race off that layoff, and he was improving late last year. I thought he ran totally respectable. I mean, he got a good trip, but I can't get this damn thing to load, but as soon as it does, I'll tell you. Figures in my head, it was like a mid 90, maybe 90, okay. low to mid 90. I think they're a little slow for the Derby, but 94 for Encino.
I mean, pretty rock solid, but probably not going to win the
probably.
Derby. Yeah,
you know, he did. You know, he ran faster at every point of call, including his late pace number. So he's moving forward. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked to see him in a perfect scenario run like a high 90 next time if he jumps forward again. And that, you know, in this Derby, that could play.
Well, that brings me to the sort of bigger picture question I wanted to ask you about. I'm going to give myself room. I don't know if I'll take it or not. I'm going to give myself room in the show here for a quick commercial break before we get on to your thoughts on the sort of established commercial, the established top of the market regarding the Kentucky Derby. So we'll get to that right now. More exciting contest news, special Illinois Derby contest at Hawthorne, Sunday, April 21st, $800 bankroll, no entry fee. All the prizes are added, and that's going to include $10,000 in cash, a BCBC seat, two NHC seats with $1 million bonuses. You can play at the Hawthorne Teletheaters, play on-site in Chicago, or online with ExpressBet. For additional information about playing live, contact Rhonda Sosnowski, Rhonda S. at clubhawthorne.com, or call Rhonda 708-780-3733. Advanced registration online as well, hawthornracecourse.com, strongly encouraged, or once again, expressbet.com/tournaments. We're thrilled to continue our partnership with Keeneland Racecourse. Keeneland's 2024 spring race meet continues through Friday, April 26th. No racing will be held on Mondays or Tuesdays, of course, but the other days, you got Keeneland coming down the pike. Be sure to play the new 15% takeout rolling doubles, as well as the low takeout turf pick three. Any day there are three turf races. Also, don't miss the daily Keeneland Journal released by Eric DeCoster each day on our In the Money Plus service. For more information about that, go to inthemoneypodcast.com/plus and check out all the great free coverage we have of Keeneland as well. Eric Solomon leading the charge over there, inthemoneypodcast.com. Before the break there, Sean, we're about to talk to you about the general Triple Crown / Kentucky Derby picture so far. You made a comment about maybe this is a year where a high 90s can get the job done. I can only guess that makes me think you're not necessarily as team fierceness as JK and I have been to this point. For starters, what kind of numbers have you been what kind of number did you give him in the two fast races, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and the Florida Derby?
Well, so that's the thing about fierceness is, like, you know, here I'm just going to start from maiden, breaker, at Saratoga and move forward. So these are my figures, my final figures, 89, 58, 105 in the Breeders' Cup, 65 in this shitty Holy Bowl, 106 in the Florida Derby. So, you know, to me, what horse are we going to get? I'm inclined to think we're going to get the good fierceness on Derby Day. And if he runs, it's probably, you know, it's probably his race. But, you know, even those fast figures, I could poke enough holes in them where I don't really want a short price on this horse at all. You know, he got a pretty perfect setup in the Florida Derby, did run a 106 final, but he downlined to a 99 LP.
Interesting.
And that's really good. But given, you know, the soft trip, a little slight, you know, soft pace early on my stuff, and the down line there at 9 furlongs, it doesn't make me feel great about 10 furlongs.
And he was wrapped up. Does that factor into it at all? Or in your experience, does that not really matter?
In my experience, that doesn't mean shit. It's usually just a narrative situation that, you know, well, this horse could run 3 lengths faster.
But there's no way.
Reality, that, there's no way.
Yeah.
You know, so he's a horse you either play on top or you throw him out completely to me, because he could run first, he could run last if he doesn't fire. And I don't know what makes him tick and what doesn't. I mean, you know, he could be a bleeder or something. He's running some stakes races. He can't run on Lasix, and sometimes maybe he doesn't bleed. I don't have any idea, but he's not trustworthy at all.
Not the most straightforward. Am I right that this is a horse for whom the draw matters more than others? I feel like drawing down in the first four, I mean, gosh, it might not matter. I mean, if he can just break like a shot, maybe it doesn't matter where he's drawn. But personally, I'd feel more comfortable, you know, six or out, just for the idea, and I wouldn't mind him being far drawn, just for the idea that even if he breaks half a step slow, maybe he has that opportunity to recover, whereas he feels like a horse I would trust less breaking half a step slow if he were to down on the inside. Just seems like a candidate to get buried and or knocked around and the kinds of things that have seemingly contributed to the so-so performances. Would you too feel better about him depending on the draw?
100%. I think the perfect draw for him is 20, to be honest.
Interesting.
Just allows him to do whatever he wants to out there, and he's, you know, tactical enough to make that work. You know, sort of like a Big Brown type situation. If he draws down inside, I think he's an automatic throwout. He's going to be short odds. Yeah. You know, he's just the kind of horse you can't trust enough to, you know, he's, like you said, 1 through 4. I don't even like 6, 7, or 8 for him all that much, because it allows too much to happen at the break there that could get him. So in a 20 horse field, you break even a half a step slow, somebody's going to come over on you eventually, and like all of a sudden he's fighting and tugging and he's behind 3 horses going into that first turn and hates it, and then, you know, that's just tough. So if he were to draw 20, I'd be very interested.
The price right now internationally floating around 4 to 1. I thought that was pretty good for a horse that has the figure advantage he has. I think you're probably right on the day. You're looking more like 2 to 1. It's become so, all the attendant questions you've been talking about are fairly pervasive in the narrative around the horse. So I don't think you're going to see him bet like a typical 110 buyer out of the last race when the next highest figure out of the last race is 98. That kind of discrepancy could normally lead to him being 3 to 2 or whatever. I don't think you're going to see, or shorter. I don't think you're going to see that despite the figure advantage, I think you'll probably get at least 2-1. Would 4-1 be a backable price for you now, not knowing the draw?
I don't know. That's probably in territory I just wouldn't want to.
Yep.
Wouldn't want to mess with. You know, you look at a horse that's got such a figure edge, and you would think that would be enough. But it's still there's so many questions with him that I don't think I could do 4-1.
Doesn't get your motor running. Yeah, I mean, there's no way he'll be. Well, I guess though, if you knew he was going to be drawn outside, then that's the kind of thing that might make that number appealing to you. But of course, by that point, it would be long gone.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, with a horse like this, I would be much more inclined to just wait till race day and try to create sort of like a synthetic win bet through exactas, you know, like say, you know, because there's a couple horses that I think will be short in the market that I don't love that you could maybe get like a, you know, 20 or 30-1 horse run second, and then create, you know, get 40-1 on this horse to win if you get some bomb in the exacta. So just try to create a scenario where you know the 4-1 is just a bad price anyway.
You're doing a good job here. You're making my job easy because that's such an easy segue to who are the horses that are taking some money or project to take some money that you don't like in this.
Well, I don't love Sierra Leone at the price he's going to be. I think he'll be a pretty solid second choice, and I don't think the Bluegrass was that an impressive race. I don't believe for a second that he ran into a bias or any of the stuff that's floating around about that racetrack, and he looks like a lot of other closers in this field to me that I think could still move forward and will be much better prices. So what I don't love him as second choice at all.
What have you had on him LP wise in the last couple, if you don't mind sharing that level of granular info? And yeah, looking at some of the mathematical approaches to bias, that matches what I think was going on in that track. And tell me if you think this is even wrong. I'd say it was kind to speed, not a bias, but just like it was useful. But it wasn't dictating the results or anything like some of the stuff that I've been hearing that you'd mark him up big time. I think it was a classic case of where whatever the track was doing, the pace was such, even though the speed stuck on, the pace was such that counterbalanced any advantage you would have gained from the bias and made it a result that I would just kind of take at face value figure-wise rather than looking to mark it up or mark it down.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think, you know, it's a dirt race at Keeneland. It's, you know, it's going to be sort of kind to speed, but it's not like Keeneland 15 years ago where it dictated anything. I don't think, you know, and a lot of those races from a pace perspective, you know, lended themselves to look like they would be kind to speed.
Yes.
So I just don't agree at all that there was a bias. And then Sierra Leone, he's a deep closer who has yet to run 100 LP for me. Now he's come close. He's run a 99, ran a 95 in the Bluegrass, and ran faster earlier. But he's just not a horse to me that screams like all of a sudden he's going to jump up and run a 103 on Derby Day. I just sort of feel like he's probably a high 90 with a good trip. And there's other horses in here that I think could, you know, get up into triple digits given the right scenario at 3 or 4 times the odds.
There are some other interesting closers, potentially Catching Freedom, Honor Marie come to mind. They all seem a little bit of a piece to me. Are those two of the ones that, you know, you think might be able to get the trip that everybody's expecting Sierra Leone to get if the speed does back up in the Derby?
Yeah. And they've both, you know, the LPs coming out of that Louisiana Derby were really good. They both, you know, I told you off air, I was watching tape on Honor Marie when you sent the link for this. So I didn't finish it, but that horse, you know, he's steadily improving. Ran his fastest middle part of the race last time, ran a 104 late pace figure, just screams improving three-year-old with the right kind of closer profile to do something in the Derby. You know, these horses have to get lucky with trip and post and all that stuff. But, you know, he looks like one that could jump forward to me. Catching Freedom, same thing. You know, ran a like an elite pace, late pace figure last time. I believe it's a 110 for me. So, you know, he could be anything. But, you know, they've got to get lucky. Yes. But a lot of times these horses do get lucky in the Derby. Like, it seems like almost every year one of these things runs at a decent price. So, you know, it's there's opportunities there.
Very interesting.
That are, I think, better wagering opportunities than Sierra Leone. They may not be actually better horses at the moment, but they, you know, they, I think they'll be better bets.
Amazingly, the Brits still have Sierra Leone as a clear 3-1 favorite over 4-1 Fierceness. Catching Freedom over there, 12 right now. I'm looking for Honor Marie. Honor Marie, 33. I mean, that's interesting for an each way. Try to get, especially if you could find an extra place somewhere if you're an international listener. That 33 on Honor Marie, super interesting. Because the other thing to consider about Honor Marie, and I don't know if you factored this into your analysis or if you'd even heard me say this or Frank McGowey say this, but, you know, Frank, who'd been watching him train all winter, said ahead of the comebacker, notably short horse. Whatever he does today, he's gonna improve markedly. So, boy, you got one there sitting third race of the bench that you know was unfit two races back running those kind of numbers at that kind of price. That might be the interesting horse. We might have found your monster pod horse here, Sean.
Yeah, I could. I was, you know, I was starting to get pretty interested when I was rolling through the tape and looking at his profile. So, I would agree. And I had not heard Frank mention that before, so that's good to hear as well. The horse, yeah. You know, bred to run all day. You know, distance shouldn't be an issue.
There's a lot going on with that horse for sure. Only other horse in single digits is Forever Young. This is a horse that I'm pumped to say early preview. We're going to have Randy Moss for the Monster Pod. And Randy wanting to talk this horse on the Monster Pod tells me he's done some Dubai figure work and this horse must fit okay. I, from various sources, really pulling this out of my hat, do not take this seriously, was estimating that as about 100. I was going to sort of consider it around 100 before I talk to the likes of you, Sean, and Randy, and people who've done the proper figure work. What do you make of Forever Young? I know you're not one of these people who thinks, oh, a Japan horse, a UAE Derby horse can never win the Derby. Do you think the Japan win for the Kentucky Derby could happen as soon as this year?
I mean, it could, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I haven't done that figure out of Dubai yet. I think we've gone over, you know, those Dubai figures the last few years pre-Derby, and they're hard to do, and they don't seem to be super reliable to me. Even if you feel good about the figure you come up with, it just doesn't seem like it's transferred yet. But that horse is obviously very talented, and, you know, I think past the, you know, past Fierceness, this isn't like an elite Derby, I don't think, in terms of figures. It certainly could be this year. I do think we're starting to get to the point where a lot of these Japanese horses are starting to be overbet a little bit. They've had so much success internationally, and there's, you know, it's not a secret anymore. So, you know, I don't know how much I want to bet on him, but he could certainly, you know, he could win, sure.
He's not one of the others you think is going to catch money that you'd be actively looking to bet against in that way that you might cover Fierceness.
Well, he could be, depending on, you know, once I do that figure, he could be.
But that's more a reflection of just the market enthusiasm for Japanese runners internationally, given how they seem to win everything everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if he's a solid third choice and is only running like high 90s with, you would think a horse like that has tremendous late pace figures, but a lot of times they don't. A lot of times they're sort of, you know, they look visually like they should, but they really don't. So I'd have to see that before really deciding, but at, you know, solid third choice at, six or seven to one doesn't excite me too much. No.
No. Is there any other way this early on that your eye has been drawn in terms of somebody either to be a winner or, you know, for use, big price use in the exactas?
No, not really. I was rolling through this list, a points list, and almost everything past domestic product is 14th on the Derby website right now. Almost everything past him, I don't really want any part of. So no, it's not an exciting race to me at the moment to bet. I just sort of hope that they, day of, I just sort of hope they make some sort of mistake on the board and I can play something. But this isn't a kind of Derby where I'm like already super jazzed to bet somebody. I'm just, I'm going to try to treat this as just another race that day.
Right. Well, given what you do for a living, that's definitely the kind of thing that you have to do more so than the average person who's just a racing fan for whom this represents a great opportunity potentially. Another horse that's going to take a ton of money I need to ask you about is Just a Touch. Very curious how that progressive one looks on your numbers. Won't be under 10 to 1, I wouldn't think, but a horse that feels like will be between 10 and 20 and probably next in the betting. I'm going to guess next in the betting behind Sierra Leone, Fierceness Forever Young, and Catching Freedom.
Yeah, I think he's probably up against it. He's certainly getting better and, best of pace last time and a quick pace, so that's positive, but just hasn't run well enough late in these races to make me think he can withstand a Derby pace scenario or trip or anything like that. So I'm going to be pretty against him.
I think it's interesting that you can see, you have numerical reasons for, I think a lot of people's narrative being afraid of betting Just a Touch would be the idea of too much too soon. And it almost seems like you can codify that with the way you're looking at his pace arrays. What specifically is it that makes you doubt that he's ready for this test at this time? Is it as simple as the LPs don't stack up, or is there something more to it than that?
It's just, you know me, it's just the LPs, man. He's, his best one is a 93, and that was in the Gotham with a pretty efficiently run race for him, but not outstanding early. I mean, he didn't run above a 90 early pace figure. And then when he was forced to last time going longer, he got his early pace figures up into the triple digits for me, but then his late pace fell off all the way to an 81. And that's, that's just screams. Move on the turn in the Derby and hit the wall at the quarter pole. It is not a factor. So, he's not interesting to me.
I want to talk to you about a couple of the other prep races, if not for Derby use, but just in general for all the horses that are going to be coming and running back out of these races. Let's start in New York for the Wood Memorial, a race I'm guessing you did do a figure for. That one was won by Resilience. On the commercial stuff, he looks way too slow. He's got a pair of 90 buyer speed figures in the last two. The two horses that were bet in there who'd run the solid figures didn't really show up. He did appear to finish the race off. I'm just curious how he looks on his array, if there's maybe more to him than meets the eye, or if he's just a nice horse who, again, might find a test like this a little bit too difficult at this stage.
Yeah, I think he's way overmatched in here. Sort of similar. He's like to me, he's like a poor man's Just a Touch, if I'm, looking at these figure lines, because he ran a little bit slower early, probably 2 to 3 lengths slower in the middle part of the race, about a length slower on my final figure, and then has the exact same late pace figure.
Oh, boy.
He's a takeout reducer.
Yeah. That sounds like a very weak, the Wood comes back very weak on your stuff, which isn't really a shock given, like I said, the two horses that seem to have the upside, Deterministic and Tuscan Sky, just were complete no-shows.
Yeah. I probably need to go back and rewatch that race because, in all fairness, I was watching it in the car as we drove back from spring break. But it, you know, my impressions going into the race were that it was a bad race, and my impressions going out that it was even worse, and the figures sort of back that up. So I'm not interested in any of those horses.
What about the Santa Anita Derby? Another one that came back very slow on the commercial figures. Imagination looked like the one in there that was maybe capable of running a race that could have put him in the conversation for a race like the Preakness or whatever. He regressed. Stronghold got the job done, but I mean, paired up 89s. I'm surprised by how much this horse has actually caught some money internationally. I really don't see it on the regular old form that we see. Anything in your numbers that suggests this race was better than what the commercial figures are saying?
No, not from a figure standpoint. I mean, I guess to play devil's advocate a little bit, I mean, he did run faster at every point of call than he ever had before, so he's clearly
Improving.
improving. But I just don't see it. I mean, he's still, he ran a 92 final for me, a 91 late pace figure. That's just not good enough. I mean, if he draws outside and gets a cushy trip and jumps forward again, maybe he's the kind of horse that can round out the super somewhere at a big price, but I don't see it.
I can't say that I blame you. I was very much on the imagination train there. Was surprised he was as good of a price as even money, especially with Dettori having won his six previous races. I figured he was going to be odds on, and I looked up and said, "Ah, even money. All right, we'll get involved here." Didn't work out so well. Another question about Stronghold, more of a general philosophical question about a race like the Kentucky Derby. Does it bother you at all? Let's say this horse came back stronger on the numbers and looked like at least a peripheral contender. A trainer like Phil D'Amato wins everything in California. Do you see it as any kind of a negative that he hasn't had that kind of success on a stage like the Kentucky Derby, or is that just the kind of thing where he just hasn't had the horse and you wouldn't hold that against him at all?
Yeah, I think in general, it's best to just not hold that against him. Just as a philosophy, I don't really subscribe to that. Just seeing it so many times over the years, Pletcher couldn't win at Churchill, and all of a sudden he wins all the fucking races, and then Sadler can't win out of California, and he wins the Breeders' Cup Classic, and it's just these guys are really good trainers. And they'll figure it out. I mean, most of it is just circumstantial anyway, that they get a bad trip or they don't have the right horse or whatever. But I think Phil D'Amato's a tremendous trainer. That would those kind of guys are guys that I'm typically trying to look to bet on, usually, that have proven themselves enough, but the public for whatever reason doesn't see it that way at certain places or whatever it is. So I wouldn't hold that against the horse. I just don't think this is the one,
Yeah, of course. I've heard people question, Chad Brown's ability to win a Kentucky Derby. Personally, I think that's like borderline nuts, given how well he's run with Good Magic and with Zandon. Zandon, a horse who just clearly didn't want to go that far. If Zandon had, it wasn't Zandon's training that didn't get him home in the Kentucky Derby. It was a combination of his blood and the pace. But I mean, clearly this Chad Brown, somebody who, I would actually go, even though he's not won the race, I would still consider his name on the trainer line a positive. I assume based on what you just said about D'Amato that you feel the same way, I might as well ask. I mean, you have any question about Chad Brown's ability to win this race with the right horse?
No, I mean, it's
Crazy,
just
right?
laughable. I mean, well, first it was Chad Brown just can't win on dirt, and then he wins all kind of dirt races, and then now it's he can't win the Derby, because I don't have any idea why that would be rational or logical, but sure. I mean, I would bet on a Chad if I like the horse. I'd bet on Chad Brown running in mud somewhere. I mean, it's or on the beach somewhere. He's a fucking great horse trainer. These guys, they know what they're doing. You don't
100%.
win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and the Bluegrass and all the races he's run, the Tampa Bay Derby. you know, if you don't know how to win the Kentucky Derby, it's just a horse race on a patch of dirt.
And it's and much harder. Just think of the numbers game. You have that many fewer opportunities, so it's very easy for a great trainer to have an offer. You know, obviously, Asmussen, another one that comes to mind, and I can only imagine your answer would be exactly the same there.
Yes, I would bet on Steve Asmussen to win the Kentucky Derby.
Yes. A lot of that stuff falls into the exact kind of narrative stuff I feel like you've been making a career betting against, you know, trying to fade the narrative. So-and-so can't win. Fill in the blank. Feels like something. I doubt you've made too many bets in your life on suppositions such as those.
I used to fall into that trap until they just beat me over the head with it a few times. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't take long to figure out that that's just an advantage. I mean, you know, here's a good example. There's a guy in Hong Kong named Michael Chang, and he's considered one of the worst guys over there.
Not
the tennis player, no. And he's considered like a bottom tier trainer over there. And he's the one guy who shipped over and won a graded stakes race in America.
Right.
That tells me right there, the man can train. He might not get the horses he used to, but he'd train. And they just don't. They don't like to bet him over there. And every now and then you get some great opportunities betting his horses. I mean, he won. I'm pretty sure he won the Santa Anita.
I can't remember the name of the horse, but yeah, he won the sprint championship. Yeah, I think it was the sprint championship. It might have been.
It might have been
a sprint. Yeah, that's what it was. In prep for the Breeders' Cup. Gosh, I wish I could remember the name of that horse. We need Nick Tamaro for that one.
Yeah, Nick would know. Nick's probably screaming at his computer right now. Or when he listens, he will be.
Let's talk about some of these other prep races. I feel like we've touched on most of them. We haven't talked to Arkansas Derby at all, though. And this one, you know, may be more relevant, obviously, for the Preakness. But how impressed are you with Muth / the general form of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile at this point? A race that came back very fast on everybody's scale. And then for a minute there, it was like, what's going on with the form of this race? And then after Fierceness and Muth won again that weekend, that day of March 30th, it feels like, we were right the first time. That was a really good, fast race. How does he look? How would he look in the Kentucky Derby if he were allowed to run it?
He'd be a strong contender on my stuff. I think if Fierceness shows up and wins the Derby, I think that could be a hell of a matchup in the Preakness because they're pretty comparable.
Oh, interesting. What kind of – do you mind sharing the specifics of your numbers on Muth? Commercially, he's topped out at a 98 on the buyer speed for your scale.
Okay, yeah. I gave him 100 with a 99 late pace figure, and his late pace figures are just steadily improving as he's getting older and more seasoned. So, I would expect him to probably jump forward again. I think he's a nice horse. It's sort of a shame we can't get, you know, this pissing match is still going on between the CDI and Baffert that, you know, I get it. I understand why they don't want him in there. But at the same time, like, you're not producing the best. Your marquee race is not going to be what it could be because of it. And that, to me, that's just sort of silly. But
it's unfortunate.
As with most things in this industry, the hell with the fans and the players. We'll just do whatever we want to.
I'm hoping this is the last year we have to deal with it. Let's put it that way. Now, he won't be competing. It doesn't sound. Who knows what the status is of Nysos? He's on a milk carton right now. But did you go back far enough to do the numbers on him? Because, boy, he commercially had some really fast numbers.
Yeah, I've got figures for him. In my head, they were not nearly as good for me.
I'm curious if you don't mind pulling it up. Now, we got to figure out what's going on with him. I'm hoping he comes out of the woodwork and can maybe make the Belmont. But, yeah, I feel like he was triple digits in that third start on the buyer scale. Let me take a look. That was March. That goes back to March 3rd. But I can pull that up here rather easily on the formulator, and when we can take a look and see.
Yeah, tell me the race date.
So it was March 3rd. March 3rd, Santa Anita's sixth race. If you want to take a look.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up. We'll see what it says.
Actually, wait a second. That's not right. That was a race that Imagination.
No, that was Imagination.
Yeah. What am I doing here? pulling up the wrong horse. Give me another. Let me have another crack at that. March. Did I tell you March that? Because he was scratched from that race. February 3rd, 1 month earlier. February 3rd, the fifth race is the one we want. And we'll see. I'm just curious to see if he looks as progressive on your stuff as he did.
I was wrong. He did. He ran a 105 that day for me.
Yeah, 105 for Beyer as well, actually.
That's what it was. Weak late pace figure. That's what it was.
Gotcha.
So he was one of these that only ran like high 80s to 90s early, and then only ran a 91 LP. So I remember saying to myself, that's a phony 105.
Interesting. That's very interesting. So not one you'd be in a hurry to bet back. Remember also, I don't know if you did trips for it, but he kind of drifted in the lane. That was not one. Mm-hmm. That wasn't, again, look, I understand the likely fallacy of saying this, but I totally understand anybody watching Fierceness's tape the last time and thinking to themselves, well, he could have run faster. I didn't get that impression about Nysos back there. But also, the other thing to consider is it was a couple months ago. I mean, granted, mm-hmm. It's not like he's had uninterrupted preparation. So him being away cuts both ways. But, you know, with maturity, just to have the brilliance to run that kind of number at that point in your three-year-old season, certainly a horse you want to keep an eye on, even if he's not going to be one that's going to be any value to bet.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think that's right. I would just, you know, that profile is just the kind I'm always looking to bet against, in the right spots. You know, he could line up against another bunch of bums and be odds on and should be odds on. But in a Triple Crown type race or a good stakes race, I would be betting against him, even with that big figure.
I'm assuming that you're in line with the idea that Track Phantom just presumably doesn't want to run this far. I mean, it does seem like they are going to give him a shot, and he could be an interesting injection of pace in a race like the Kentucky Derby. But I mean, it just master of the obvious. He visually doesn't seem to finish his races, so I'm very curious how that looks on your pace lines for him. He last ran in the Louisiana Derby, March 23rd, race number 12.
Yeah, I'll just have him pulled up. I've lost him for some reason, but he's a total toss to me.
Gotcha. I was wondering, as well as Catching Freedom finishes, maybe some of it was a little devil's advocate. Maybe some of it was a little illusory. He didn't finish as bad as it looked. It's just that the others were finishing faster. But if he's really backing up on your stuff too, then, you know,
he doesn't look near good enough to me. I'm trying to pull the figure up, but I'm having trouble.
And then the other ones
acting funny.
Well, we can wait for it and talk about some other stuff around it. Yeah, I thought it was interesting they were going to persist with him, but you know, you only get one chance to run in the Kentucky Derby, right? So you figure, you know, I assume that's what it is. Not a ton of prestige in cutting back comparatively to cutting back to the 6-furlong race. If you have any sort of story or thought as to why you might be able to do better going longer, I don't blame the connections at all for taking a shot given all the prestige involved in the race. But from a betting point of view, yeah, one to avoid with a 10-foot pole as far as the Kentucky Derby is concerned.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what's going on, but I can't pull them up. So
we'll get it the next time. It sure sounds like it's going to be the numbers are going to back up the narrative on that one. Dornock, there's a horse who's had some narrative associated with him, loads of narrative associated with him in the, you know, the idea put forward after the Fountain of Youth by connections that he, you know, he's the type of horse that, you know, runs to the level of competition. That's the kind of narrative I can envision you wanting to fade. The narrative after the Bluegrass is, well, we were in the race anyway. We wanted to experiment with rating. Obviously, he didn't like that. So we're going to go, you know, hammer and tongs for the lead in the Derby. And we're going to see the real Dornock. I think that would be the Dornock fans' way of framing it. Do you have any love for this horse at this stage?
I do. I love him because he's going to be a takeout reducer. I mean, he's a complete throwout. He's not that fucking good. Yeah, he's great. The more Dornocks in the field, the better.
unfortunately, at the moment, 25-1. So not a significant. Yeah, only get 3 or 4 points out of there. But you never know if the narrative takes hold. If he's the horse, you know, there's always that one horse that has the workout that gets everybody talking. You know, it could be more so than that. But, you know, you don't have the – if he was, you know, Jack Dornock, you'd have a much better chance of achieving that reducer role. We don't know too many people named Dornock, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's. I think the public figured him out a little too early because he's just not that good.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I think he's a. I do think he has some real toughness. I think it's a tough assignment, but I think it's just such a tough assignment. You know, you got some serious freaking horses who are going to run races faster. Horses I think you can really count on running faster than what he's been able to manage so far. Does seem interesting from a pace point of view, though, if nothing else. I mean, I'm curious to start seeing. I don't know when we'll get our first time form U.S. pace projector on what this is going to look like, but that it'll also just be interesting to see if several of these are faster than Fierceness Early. You know, Fierceness is a horse I would really like to see take the bull by the horns in this spot. And look, I think he can track. He can get the typical Pletcher trip tracking 2 wide, 3 wide. He doesn't have to be on the lead, but I'll feel better if he's not the fourth fastest horse early. How do you use the pace scenario in when you're evaluating a horse like Fierceness?
You know, I think what you said is right. I think the best trip for him is probably laying third off of, you know, 2 inferior speed horses, getting that exact trip that, you know, Pletcher horses love to get.
Yep.
I think that's the best trip for him. I also think, you know, if we get the good Fierceness, he could just easily make the lead and you know, sort of be like Always Dreaming, just, you know, make the lead and go on with it. I think. Because he's downlined a couple times when running those big figs, I think the worst pace scenario is, you know, if he draws inside and has to be used hard early and some of these other guys go after him and it's like, you know, a 110 or a 115 early pace figure in a duel, I think that's the situation where you might get the bad Fierceness and he just stops and just drops totally out of it. But if it's moderate to moderately fast pace and he can be on the outside and sort of make the move when he wants to and sort of dictate things a little bit, I think that's perfect.
We just did our Derby draft show on YouTube. I'm not sure if you got a chance to check that out, but that's the interesting disagreement that Michelle and I had about Fierceness. I see it just the way you do. He's not opposed to competition or looking a horse in the eye. It's about how fast he has to go and how comfortably, for me, he's able to be ridden to do that. And yes, if it's the combination of those things, being in a little bit of a tussle in a fast pace, that is going to call into question his ability to finish. But I don't think he's faint-hearted. You know, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile race to me suggests you just let him run, get out there. And, you know, he's not one of these speed horses that you want to go slow and then finish. You want him just go and bottom out the field. And I think that was the plan in the Florida Derby. As it turned out, he was so much better than his competition that he didn't have to go very fast to bottom out that field. But I wouldn't be surprised if he has that gear in him. And for a horse like this that can run a fast overall, but doesn't have a fast LP, isn't that kind of the game? Like, get enough of a head start where it doesn't really matter?
Yeah, but I do wish he would have run a triple-digit late pace figure last time. I mean, sure. That's the one thing to me that really bothers me about him, is that he got to get it his own way early and didn't run through the wire like I like to see, I guess. Figure-wise, visually, something totally different.
Visually, it was fine, but that's like you said, over the years, the numbers tell a story with more signal than the eyes when it comes to LPs versus. Yeah.
So I would really worry if they run a, you know, on my scale, if they run a 110 first pace figure, and he's up in it, I would be concerned about him finishing. But if they run 100 and it's not a hard duel and he's sitting off it a little bit, then I think that's probably exactly what he wants.
I'm annoyed at your system again, because I was just going to ask you, what is Track Phantom? You know, what a Track Phantom and Dornock run early? Are they more like 100 types, or are they more like 110 types? You might be able to get a clue from a long way out about how fast this is going to be.
Yeah, Dornock ran up like right around 100 last time. Track Phantom, I just saw it. Track Phantoms weren't that fast. They were more like mid-90s.
Okay, so nothing from those two that you'd necessarily worry about fierceness with necessarily.
There's like speed horses in this race, but none of them are like pure, unbelievably fast speed horses to me. So I think this will probably be sort of a moderate to moderately fast Derby pace, and not one of the like, oh shit, it's going to melt down Derby paces.
Well, that's
could be. I mean, you know, riding, you know, where they draw and what the jockeys end up doing out of the gate obviously dictates all that. But just off, you know, if all these horses draw where they want to draw and get to run the way they seemingly want to run, I don't think it's going to be like a Derby pace like we've seen in the past, where it's 115 or 120 on my scale.
What advice would you give if you were hired as a consultant by the connections of Endlessly, who's currently seventh on the points list, could easily get in this race? They had, I swear I heard something where they had originally come out and said, no, it's the American turf for us. Now, considering the Derby, listed as possible in the original figures. Is there anything, any clues you can get for a first-time dirt runner if they're going to take to it based on your numbers and the work you've done over the years, or is it just very much of a guessing game?
You know, I think the horse would take to it. You know, in my experiences, horses that have run well on turf and poly track and are good horses, I mean, I think there's no question that he's a quality horse. You know, he's running figures in the 90s to mid 90s. For me, so I think the quality is there. And typically, they will run on all the surfaces. If I was advising them specifically, I would say go in the American turf, because he's just not fast enough to win the Derby.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe he's fast enough to run third or fourth, but I just don't think that's exactly what you shoot for.
Right.
Maybe it is. I mean, you know, I'm not any kind of expert on breeding and you know what that would do for the value of a horse to run third in the Derby at. But to me, it seems like winning the American turf would be a better objective.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
So that would, you know, he's just a little light on figures.
We're waiting on that decision to see. Anything else Derby-wise, or can we spend the last few minutes? I had a couple other questions about your sort of U.S. operation, but I don't want to keep you from sharing any thoughts on these Derby horses, since we've spent a good chunk of time talking about them.
No, I think we can move on. I don't have much else to say, I don't think.
So you mentioned about getting your figures in order. Are you mainly doing it for Derby specifically, or are you thinking / Keeneland, or are you thinking of doing a little bit more this summer? I mean, there's that thing where Hong Kong ends and you kind of do have the summer, if you want it, to look at Saratoga and Del Mar. What are your current plans as you look ahead to the next several months of your playing?
Well, you know, I really thought after this fucking tax bill today, my plans are to start betting a lot more and make some more money. you know, I've got, you know, a couple guys now that I'm trying to teach the figures to, and they're helping me make them. And after I thought about it for a while, I thought, you know, I should be more involved in the process, and that'll help me teach them better, I think.
Yeah,
so I picked up Kentucky and New York and California figures again. Mainly, you know, I think I was just getting a little complacent in general, and this is going to force me to be a little more engaged. But sort of exactly what you said, like there's that natural break with Hong Kong and Saratoga and Del Mar are both running that time of year, and a lot of the Kentucky figs will transfer to those tracks too. So I just thought those three would probably help me the most. One, because I'm interested in them, you know, I'm interested in those circuits, and just to get more involved and to help my guys out as much as I can. So that's sort of the plan. I'm gonna try to start betting a little bit more in the U.S. So I still think, you know, a lot of the decision to stop betting in the U.S. was a financial decision, but it was also a lifestyle decision. You know, I didn't want to be tied up every weekend. I wanted to spend more time with my kids, stuff like that. And I think I've sort of figured out a way to still be involved, because there are some opportunities. It's not, you know, I don't think there's hardly any opportunities on Wednesday and Thursday anymore, maybe not even Friday, but on the weekends I think there's opportunities, and my figures seem to perform the best with the better horses on the bigger days. So I'm gonna try to get more involved in U.S. stuff, and you know, quite honestly, you know, I was having a conversation with another guy that bets Hong Kong seriously just yesterday or the day before, and you know, the Hong Kong market's getting smarter.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I've been sitting here all season saying it's, you know, things are more efficient over there now than they were last season, and you know,
more odds drops too, you had mentioned to me.
There's more odds drops. There's very clearly more professional money in those pools this season. And when I was speaking with my guy, you know, he's got a sort of a team around him, and they did some analysis, and you know, they thought it was, you know, the number that they said off their data, you know, that it was X amount more efficient. I don't want to tout his work without talking to him, but he, you know, they came up with a figure that said the pools are this much more efficient than they were last year, and it was the exact number that I had in my head, just sort of sitting here watching things. So that tells me that, you know, that we're right.
Yeah.
And that those pools are getting smarter. So, you know, you just got to keep, stay nimble and keep trying to find opportunities where you can find them. And, you know, just try to get the best pricing on your bets that you can get. That's, you know, that's all you can do.
You grew up in the game as a grinder, and that just world doesn't exist anymore. And it sounds to me you're much more like a selective puncher these days, all about not just choosing spots in terms of when to play, but then even those days that you play to choose the spots within the spots. It sounds like that's where you're getting your best results. From what I hear, that's what I would advise.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's exactly right. It's, you know, and especially in Hong Kong, it's really important to, you know, I've got to force myself to bet not every single race, but every opinion I have, because it's still very hard to, there's so much chaos in those races with the big fields and the paces and stuff that, you know, like for instance, last weekend, you know, I had basically three opinions and I was worn out from being at Keeneland all day. And I just, you know, I'm struggling to force to keep myself awake on Saturday night still. It's just tough. And I said, you know, two of my opinions are in the late pick three. I can send that in. I don't really need to stay up for it. I can just create the bet, send it in, see if it wins in the morning. The other one was more of a vertical play within the race, and I would have needed to be up for that. And I just, you know, I passed that opinion, bet the other ones. The other ones lose. That one hits. And it's, you know, these were very frustrating Sunday morning where I'm just like, you know, I had this play, and I, you know, you could have cashed 50,000 or 60,000 out of that race pretty easily if you come up with a smart play. Instead, you know, I come up with a loser. But it's, you know, it's sort of exactly what you said. Like, it's just finding spots in different places and trying to be flexible enough to bet them right and to be aware of when they come up. So that's, you know, I'm trying to stay more engaged in the U.S. and find the spots here that I need to be involved in. I'm certainly going to keep looking at Hong Kong. And just, you know, that's it.
I'll close with a fishing analogy. You know, we used to talk a lot about finding the right pools to fish in. It sounds like the modern game, from your point of view, it's, yeah, you got to find the right pool, but then you also got to pick the right bait at the right time of day and really put it all together.
Yeah, I think that's actually a good analogy, because things are just much harder than they used to be. Like, you've got to be really precise, at least playing the way that I play. You know, you've got to be really precise, and you've got to make big scores and capitalize on those opportunities when they present themselves. You know, I some of the more automated guys, you know, they can play daily and pick up, you know, cents on the dollar a lot of times and turn a profit. Whereas for me now, it's more, you know, I may just have one winning day in 2 months, but I'm, you know, when that day presents itself, you've got to fucking capitalize on it. You've got to crush it.
Crush it as you did in your record breaking Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge win.
Exactly. And that's exactly right. I need to do that again.
Let's leave it there, Sean. I got another one I got to run into here, and we didn't get to fully catch up, but, you know, we covered a lot of ground. We're going to have you on again before the Derby for sure. Think about if you want to be part of the Monster Pod. We'd love to have you get some extended thoughts on Honor Marie or anyone really that you feel like talking about. But just want to thank you so much for sharing your experience and your knowledge with me and the listeners. It's always a blast, an hour that flies by.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It helps me just to talk things through, and you know, it's led to me being a better horse player, being able to chat with you and share with others. So I appreciate that too. Thank you.
It's as nice a compliment as I've ever gotten, my friend. So on these shows. So thank you so much. We'll be talking soon, buddy.
All right, man.
And I'll be back to close the show right after this. If you've been watching our YouTube channel, you've seen the ads we're doing for our friends over at Free Reign Coffee, freereigncoffeecompany.com. That's been what's in my cup all Triple Crown prep season, helping me to get up and get after it. Whether you're looking for grounds or beans or pods or just cool merchandise, our friends at Free Reign Coffee Company have you covered. And best of all, right now, we've got a 20% discount site-wide. Use that promo code MONEY20. Find out what all the fuss is about with Free Reign Coffee. I stand by it and think you will enjoy it too. Make sure to check out the website, freereigncoffee.com, and use that promo code MONEY20. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. I want to thank Sean Borman and the rest of today's sponsors for helping us bring this show to you, our founding partners, 10 Strike Racing, and our newest partner, Therapeutic Horses of Saratoga, our newest charity partner, I should say. This is Kim Weir's new gig, helping humans and helping horses up there in Saratoga. You're going to be hearing a lot more about them. And if you want to learn more, give to their generous cause, check out inthemoneypodcast.com/horses. Thanks, though, most of all to all of you for making these shows so much fun to do. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.